I'm afraid I've got some bad news.
I knew it. I love when he does that.
Wrestling has more than one royal family.
Adrenaline in my soul. Something, something, Cody Rhodes.
Tribal chief around here. Yeah, you see me, the tribal chief. That's right.
On time. But let me go ahead and tell you.
Shut your bitch ass up.
Look how far we've come. You're still here. This is us. These are my confessions. Still going strong. Yeah, man. Let it go.
Really thought we were gonna make it. Girl, you're the best I ever met. We both know it's over, baby, let's face it. All the good times can't fix the bad. One of us probably gonna hurt more than the other. So who's gonna be the broken? Who's gonna break the heart? Who's gonna do the leaving? And who's gonna wear the scars? Someone's gotta feel it. Someone's gotta pull it. Who's gonna walk away? And who's gonna take the bullet?
Wish we could skip past the sad part. I wish neither one of us had to take the blame. I don't wanna be the last one standing, living with the guilt and the damage. But that's no reason to stay.
When you're this far in, there's only one way out. So who's gonna be the broken? Who's gonna break the heart? Who's gonna do the leaving? Who's gonna wear the scars? Someone's gotta feel it. Someone's gotta pull it. Who's gonna walk away? Who's gonna take the bullet? Yeah, who's gonna take the bullet? Oh. Who's gonna say what has to be said? Bury whatever love we got left. Who's gonna be the one that cares enough to get it over with? So who's gonna be the broken?
And who's gonna break the heart?
Who's gonna do the leaving? And who's gonna wear the scars? Someone's gotta feel it. And someone's gotta pull it. If you wanna walk away, I guess I'll take the bullet. I guess I'll take the bullet.
Hi everybody, how's it going? Welcome to episode 413 of the Hoots Podcast as the countdown to 500 continues. Welcome everybody to the program. It's your boy, the nefarious brother Adam, aka Joshy Lopez. Hope you guys are having a wonderful day so far and week. Just got back home from work and here to shoot the shit with you guys. It's May 16th, 2024. About a couple weeks away from going back to Orlando, Florida for my 30th birthday trip. I'm very excited for it. You know, especially when you have big birthdays, you should definitely like award yourself. So this trip to Florida is my gift to me for turning 30 this year. So really looking forward to it. I want to thank all of you who are continuing to listen to this podcast. If we still have listeners, I do appreciate it. We're at like 1.3 million downloads right now on Spotify for podcasters, which is pretty cool. For those who are listening or watching for the first time, we drop this podcast every single Thursday anywhere you get your podcast from, free of charge. You can type in the Hoots Podcast and get to you right there. No harm, no foul. You don't have to pay anything. For those who missed last week's episode, I started this thing to honor May as May's Mental Health Awareness Month. And one of the gifts I got for my birthday was a pretty decent sized Amazon card, and I decided to buy a book by a content creator and a guy that was a former U.S. Navy SEAL, very popular within the YouTube community, known as David Goggins. And I bought this book called Never Finish: Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within. And we did last week, I decided, you know, go through this journey with us, each other, where we read a chapter from the book in the beginning and then read the evolution part towards the end. It's kind of like a little bookend thing. And this is the first time I've ever read a book live on a podcast before. It's also my first time doing this in general, like recording this live. So the purpose behind doing this is to help you guys with any motivation that you need, some guidance, some perspective. And like many of you all who have listened and watched these shows know that I'm in a bit of a transformation journey. And it's not just losing weight and taking care of my health. It's also how I think about things. And it's also it's good to get a swift kick in the ass sometimes, if you know what I mean. So we're going to keep doing that. And during the show, we'll get into our regular segments. We'll do this week in WWE, Clown of the Week. The Bears schedule was released yesterday, so we'll get into that as well. Then wrap up the show with the Back Porch Q&A session. And as always, with this journey with the book, for those who don't know, David Goggins has separated this book into two different parts. So he has a chapter of his life story, and then there's a thing called the evolution where you take your mental frame and bring it up to the next level. So that's what we're going to be doing today. So we'll definitely need the agua today and a lot for this week's episode. But hope you all are doing well. You can follow me on Twitter if you'd like, at the Hoots Podcast. I'm on Instagram at Josh Lopez Music. Please do us a favor, if you're watching this live on YouTube, make sure to smash the like button and subscribe to our channel as we're on the road to 1,000 subscribers on YouTube. Definitely want to get one of those YouTube play plaques here in the recording room. So please subscribe to the podcast. I'm going to try my best to pop out some new content as the weeks go by. And who knows, maybe separate the show into segments like all these other podcasts do. I think, honestly, for me, I'm not the greatest when it comes to like graphic design. So I've always wanted to do like more reaction videos and stuff like that. But it's also a thing where, like, you know, you see all these fancy graphic thumbnails with disingenuous facial expressions. And for me, I'm just not a disingenuous person. So it's a double-edged sword for me. I want to do more reactions and do more content on the channel, but I don't want to do a fake disingenuous smile to every song or video that I watch. You know, it's part of the tricks of the trade, I guess, if you will. When it comes to content creation, and I don't begrudge people who do reaction videos. A lot of people do a lot of great job with reaction videos and even streaming and stuff like that, like the live streamers for these wrestling shows. Like, for example, shout out to Wheezy Blonde. I think she's by far the best content creator within the wrestling space on YouTube in regards to her live stream reactions and how she carries herself with such a genuine point of view. And it's just like somebody cool that you want to hang out with. She's a really beautiful woman, but more importantly, she knows who she's talking about. She doesn't act like she's the smartest person in the room, and she's funny as hell too. So I just want to give a shout out to Wheezy Blonde, and then you got other people like my boys at In a Clutch, Dub, and Ross. Over the years, I've had my agreements and disagreements on Ross when it comes to booking takes and his overemphasis on booking discussions. But I respect the man. His work ethic is second to none. He has another great wrestling channel called Kicking It with Ross, which you should subscribe to. Ross is a good dude. I admire his passion, especially the energy he brings through these third and third live streams on In the Clutch. And I've always been a big fan of Dub. And there's a lot of great YouTube content creators out there. Conman167, Santi, the list goes on and on. I want to do more of those reaction videos, but that's the thing. I don't want to dish out disingenuous content, and I need help with making thumbnails to do so. So I just wanted to be honest with y'all. All that being said, we don't have a pay-per-view to preview this week, so that's good. We'll do that next week for the King and Queen of the Ring in Saudi Arabia. We'll be doing that next week. And then the week after that, I have my last week in Chicago and then back to Florida for my mental break. So it's some fun. Anyways, like I said, I want to dedicate the first part of the show as we continue on through the month of May with it being Mental Health Awareness Month. It's a very important thing in my life, and it's something that I'm very I take a lot of pride in. And talking about mental health, especially on this show, since the ascension of the Hoots podcast, and that's no different here. And that's the purpose of doing reading this to you guys. And there's going to be things that are very vulgar in here, and you know, some uncomfortable conversations, but I want to help people along the way. We can have a lot of fun talking about wrestling. We're going to be having an intervention, I guess, for the wrestling media today, because that's been a point of contention on social media over the last couple of weeks, and a lot of people have a lot of different opinions. I'd like to share my perspective as somebody who's been in the field for the last 10 years. And but along the way, I just want to stress again that it's not just strictly a professional wrestling podcast, and I hope anytime you guys watch or listen to our shows, that you're getting something positive out of it, and you learn something about life. So, anyways, let's get into it. So, again, I recommend this book to anybody. Go check it out. Maybe you can check out the audiobook if you like. I don't know if one day I'll be hired as an audiobook recording guy, but that'd be pretty cool. But if you're interested in the stories that are told in this book, that as I read to you guys as the weeks go by, get this book for yourself. Never Finish, Unshackle Your Mind, and Win the War Within. So before we get into it, let me take a swig of water. All right. Here we go. Chapter 2. Merry fucking Christmas. On the day after Christmas 2018, Kish and I had breakfast with my brother, Trudis Jr., my mother, and my niece, Alexis, at the aptly named Loveless Cafe in Nashville. It was the perfect place for a Goggins family breakfast, considering our history with the so-called happiest time of the year. Growing up, my friends made such a big deal about Christmas. They talked about it in their wish list for weeks ahead of time. They watched the same old Christmas movies and sang the same corny-ass songs. To me, it was just another day on the calendar, no different than the rest, because of how I came up. In Buffalo, Christmas was a marketing opportunity for my father. While most kids were playing with their new toys and slipping into fresh gear, we were scraping gum off the skating rink floors, then polishing them and prepping the building for an all-night skate. Once we escaped to Indiana, my mom was so shell-shocked that she couldn't have cared less about any holidays. Consumed with finding work, a place to live, and having a social life of her own, Christmas and my experience of it did not register on her priority list. It had been 3 years since I've last seen and communicated with my brother, and in the days after his eldest daughter was killed, we've always had an awkward relationship because our perspectives on our childhood are so different. When my dad was abusing us, my brother always attempted to be a peacemaker, and that required him to make excuses for our father no matter how vicious he was. He wanted everything to be kumbaya. When our dad came after our mother, Trudis Jr. made it a point to escape to his room while I made sure to watch. I saw things as they really were, and that made me a fighter. Trudis Jr. remembers things as he wished they had been. I never blamed him for it. We were all doing our best to survive somehow. My mom could protect either of us. She was getting her ass beat just as badly as we were. It was as if there were four different versions of the same reality show streaming from the same house all at once. The Genesis was not impossible not to feel and absorb. When I was 9 years old, my brother chose to leave us in our new life in India to live with our father, and we were never close after that. However, he will always be my only brother, so when I heard Kayla had been killed, I dropped everything to be with him. I will always care about him, and I admired him for surviving our fucked up childhood to become an amazing father and earn his PhD. Still, we shared too much history and experienced it too differently for it to be anything but awkward when we get together. So when he told me what he had planned after breakfast, I wasn't the least bit surprised. "We were driving to Buffalo," he said with a grin, "to show the kids around and pay our respects to the old man." I glanced at my mother, who would be accompanying him and his family on their trip down memory lane. She couldn't look me in the eye. Although she and I don't always remember every little thing the same way either, we know we survived hell. Like any good revisionist historian, Trudis Jr. is still trying to convince himself otherwise. Which is why Buffalo remains his favorite city. He makes the trip as often as possible, and whenever he does, he visits the grave of our tormentor. For survivors of trauma, denial is a tantalizing, numbing agent. It allows you to rewrite your past and sell yourself some fiction. In my brother's tale, Buffalo was a happy place, and our father was a pillar of the community. When we were kids, he forgave our father quicker than a priest in a confessional, and as an adult, his selective memory gave his childhood a brighter sheen, which makes him feel less damaged. But whether he wants to acknowledge it or not, damage was done. If he had experienced things the way my mom and I had, he wanted to subject her to a stroll through his personal fantasy land as if Buffalo weren't the torture chamber she had to escape many years ago. By 2018, I mastered my childhood demons. I was the puppeteer, and all the skeletons in my closet were on strings I controlled. My mother didn't deny what had happened to us either, but like my brother, she preferred to avoid her pain. She hated discussing her experience with my father or even thinking about it. And later, when she described that trip back to Buffalo with Trudis Jr., she said that she felt dazed. Everything looked unfamiliar, even the house on Paradise Road. She didn't recognize a single building or street name. It was as if her memory had been wiped like a hard drive. And she was seeing it all, the house, skate land, all of her old familiar haunts for the first time. Trauma will do that. It redacts places, names, and incidents if you don't do the hard work to process the difficult shit. If, like my brother, you stash it away in the back of your mind, deep enough that it becomes impossible to reach, or like my mom, try like hell to ignore it because it's too much to confront, one day, it won't just be the bad memories that are repressed. Entire chunks of your life will have slipped through your fingers. My mother could have gone to Buffalo with a game plan. It should have been her victory lap. When we left, Trudis told her that she became a prostitute and I became a gangster. Instead, she became a senior associate vice president at a medical college in Nashville, making six figures. Trudis Jr. is a college professor and a family man. I'm a retired Navy SEAL who had just been honored by the VFW and was the author of a new book. But she didn't go to Trudis' grave to tell him any of that. She floated above the moment in a bubble she built to survive another weekend in Buffalo, New York. Like most of us, she didn't want to feel her pain, so she failed to find the power in it. A lot of us are trapped in our own brains, shackled by long-gone demons who might even be dead. We refuse to discuss or acknowledge what happened. So when we overcome it all, we fail to recognize it or even feel it. My mom left Buffalo, a shell of herself, and became a successful professional woman, but she was still cowering before the demon that stole her soul. She should have written Trudis a letter telling him what he had missed and who he had unleashed. She should have read it out loud to him at his grave, not so he knew what she'd become, but so she knew it. She needed to take her soul back and introduce herself to herself. Denial is self-protecting, but it's also self-limiting. Accepting your full truth, including all your faults, imperfections, and missteps, allows you to evolve, expand your possibilities, seek redemption, and explore your true potential. And until you unpack your baggage, it will be impossible to know what your potential really is. The whole truth can haunt you if it serves you. Keisha and I were scheduled to fly to Florida that night to celebrate a belated Christmas with her tight-knit family. Christmas had always been a big deal to Kish, and though cozy holiday house sounded soft as hell to me, she's the greatest woman I've ever met. We've become partners in life and in business, and I wanted her to be happy. If that meant a trip to Norman Rockwell's Florida Christmas, so be it. But there weren't going to be any fucking matchy pajama pictures, I promise you that. We had several hours before that flight, and Kish spent them digging into the sale numbers for my first book, Can't Hurt Me. Had been out for less than a month and already sold more copies than I ever imagined possible. After more than 5 years and multiple setbacks, the book I envisioned was finally out in the world, and it was a hit. While some people may not be surprised by the book's success, there are countless others who most definitely are. Prior iterations of the book proposal have been passed on and turned down by numerous publishing houses that didn't see the value in my story. Case in point, in 2016, I presented a 100-plus page book proposal to Ed Victor. He was a legend in the literary world and was introduced to me by none other than Marcus Luttrell, who had worked with him on his best-selling book, Lone Survivor. Ed also read rock stars like Eric Clapton and Keith Richards and some of the biggest novelists in the game. He was once quoted as having grown up, quote, perceiving life as a long highway littered with green lights. In a different article, he mentioned that the criteria he used to determine the publishing potential of a given project boiled down to three questions. Is the person fabulous? Is the work good? And is there a lot of money in it? My book proposal did not pass that particular evaluation, but I gave him credit. He didn't sugarcoat the bad news in his rejection email. So here is the letter I'm about to read right here. So that's some context. From Ed Victor, date June 27, 2016 at 6:46 a.m. to David C.C. Jennifer Kish, subject your book. Dear David, I said that I would get back to you on Monday, so here I am. But you're not going to like what I have to say. My assessment of its value and its sales potential are in no way aligned with yours. I could be wrong. I certainly have been in the past. But I don't see this as a book that will command a big advance and sell a large amount of copies. When I told you I would be honest in my reaction to this project, you warned me that if I said no, I'd then see it high up on the New York Times bestseller list and deeply regret my decision. You may well be right, but because my assessment of the value and commercial prospects of the book are so far below yours, I would not be the right agent for it. You need someone with 101% enthusiasm who will go out and prove me hopelessly wrong, not for the first time. All the best. Ed, P.S. I will tell Marcus about my decision since it was he who tried to bring us together. It shouldn't have surprised me that the guy who grew up with nothing but green lights couldn't relate to a life stifled by red lights, potholes, and stop signs, but he was the industry expert and didn't see my story as accessible. That was a problem, and it was discouraging in the moment, but it didn't make me angry. I never second-guessed my own value. I knew that my life, my story, and my approach were non-traditional. Their cookie cutter didn't work on me. I couldn't be boxed and packaged to industry standards, roger that. Had I ever been the perfect fit for anything at all? Never. But I still managed to find success. What Ed Victor saw as a disadvantage, the fact that I couldn't easily define and sold what was actually my greatest asset. My approach, background, and accomplishments all proved one thing. I am the ultimate underdog. That's been the truth my whole life. And if no one can see my potential, it would be up to me to show them what they miss. There are libraries packed with books on how to be happy and the power of positivity, but nobody prepares you for the dark ages. And the power of my story was in my grind through tough times to become the one straight-faced motherfucker inspiring you to never be satisfied. Ed and all the other industry experts I met weren't interested in that because they didn't get it. That didn't mean that the book wouldn't sell. It just meant I had to double down on what made me unique, maintain faith in myself and my vision, and work harder. In 2017, I signed with a new literary agent and put together another proposal that earned me $3,000 advance from a major publishing house. That's good money, but while I waited for the contract to come through, I became conflicted. Was I ready to sell my story to someone else? Did I want or even need an editor to help me tell it? For those who are just tuning in right now and listening, I am reading chapter 2 of Never Finished by David Goggins. This is a little project that we're going to be doing here on the podcast to honor Mental Health Awareness Month, since it is the month of May. And I'm doing this to help you guys. So hope you guys enjoy the story so far. Let's continue on here. I was the only one who knew how much blood I shed and how many times I've been baptized in sweat to get me to this point. There were too many all-nighters and pre-dawn wake-up calls to count. I've been knocked down hundreds of times. I pushed my mind, body, and soul to the very edge. Like Andy Dufresne in Shawshank Redemption, I spent more than 20 years scrapping away at the prison wall of my mind with a blunt hammer, and I need that final say when it came to the edits and who made money off of my story. After many days and nights of turning it over in my head, I realized the only way to ensure that was to publish the damn book myself. Once I killed the deal, my agent cussed me out. He told me that I was off his client roster and that I would be lucky to sell 10,000 copies. Basically, he said, Merry fucking Christmas, Goggins, and cut me loose. He wasn't alone. Almost everybody I turned to for advice, people who knew how the industry worked and what it took to succeed, said I was a fool. So be it. You cannot be afraid to disappoint people. You have to live the life you want to live. Sometimes that means being the motherfucker who could put a middle finger up to everyone in the room and be totally comfortable with that. Now, does that mean you won't be nervous or that it'll be all go smoothly? Fuck no. When you're on the ramp of a C-130 at 22,000 feet, it's okay if your knees start to buckle because you know time is short and free fall is imminent. But the second you leave from the aircraft, you must commit to the jump. If you don't, you'll flop around dangerously out of control and fall too fast. You need to commit in order to focus on keeping a stable body position and never look down. Focus on the horizon. That is your perspective. That is your future. Instead of receiving a big advance, I spent 90% of my life savings more than the advance I would have received to put out a book of the same quality as anything the major publishers release, and I produced my own audiobook with an entirely new spin. It was risky, but trailblazers never take the smooth roads thousands of others have already traveled. They go cross-country and dig their own path forward. I've been outside the box my whole life. I've been smashing cookie cutters for damn near 2 decades, and this was the biggest bet I ever made on myself. You're on the New York Times bestseller list, Kish said. She looked up from her laptop and flashed a smile. She was proud, and I was too. Not because I gave two shits about the New York Times bestseller list or even that it was selling at all, but because I knew the book was an honest reflection of my life and all I put into it. And admittedly, after being told that making any bestseller list was absolutely not going to happen and impossible for a self-published book by a first-time author, it was satisfying to defy the odds one more time. I was borderline illiterate in fifth grade. That night, I imagined sitting down with that 11-year-old kid who struggled so much in class and was hungry for acceptance. If I told him that one day he would become a best-selling author, he would have laughed in my face. I shook my head, chuckled to myself, and swallowed a handful of vitamins. Without warning, my heart began to race. I put two fingers to my corded and checked my watch. My pulse shot from a steady 50 beats per minute to 150 beats a minute, and back again without any set rhythm. As an EMT and someone who had recovered from multiple heart surgeries, I knew right away that I was in atrial fibrillation, or AFib, which is when the upper chambers of the heart and the atria are out of rhythm, and the lower chambers, the ventricles. I experienced a similar episode 9 years earlier after my first heart surgery when one of the patches failed. Did another patch fail, or was this something new? I didn't tell Kish right away. She worked for months without a break to help turn Can't Hurt Me into a hit, and she couldn't wait to go home and be with her family. Instead, I tried to control my heart rate through vaginal maneuvers like equalizing the pressure in my sinuses with the Valsvala technique and squeezing my knees into my chest and forcing a gag or a cough and massaging the quartered sinus. Those techniques have been proven to reset the pressure in body and click the heart back into rhythm. Deep breathing can help too, but nothing worked. And the longer it went on, the dizzier I became and the graver in the danger. AFib could turn blood clots into embolisms that block blood vessels in the brain of heart, causing strokes and heart failure. People with sickle cell trait like me are at the highest risk for blood clots. Hours passed. I pretended everything was cool while my pulse sketched a dire electrocardiogram in my mind's eye when Kish shipped her suitcase and turned to me and ready to roll to Florida. She could see something was very wrong. We weren't headed to the airport. We were going to the emergency room. The day after Christmas is dead in most public places, but the holiday season in the ER is always bumping. Maybe it's the alcohol, the family strife, the loneliness, or a combination of all three. When I was 14 years old, my mother's fiancé, Wilmoth, was shot and killed the day after Christmas, which is why whenever the counter leans into late December, I think more about trauma than Santa. The ER was packed when we walked through the sliding glass doors. I slumped into one of the few spare seats in a waiting room, dizzy as hell. Medics, doctors, and nurses blurred as they hustled between the treatment areas, wheeling patients around the squeaky tile floors on the gurneys in wobbly old wheelchairs. The PA system crackled. Fluorescent lights buzzed overhead. Kish sat beside me and filled out paperwork as I closed my eyes, and I took yet another deep breath. Minutes later, or maybe it was hours, I did the same thing in front of a young doctor in a current off treatment area. He wasn't a cardiologist, and when I explained I had two heart surgeries, he took the news a bit too casually. He listened to my heartbeat, tagged me up with sensors, and watched my pulse scratch out rhythm on his ECG monitor. Then he told me what I just told him. You're in an AFib. Roger that. I shot him the side eye. Kish caught it. What can you do for him, doctor? She asked. We're going to put you on a drip and see how you respond. A nurse came in and tapped my vein, and the meds seemed to work. Within minutes, my pulse relaxed and my dizziness eased. But when the doc strolled back in an hour later, he looked confused as he read the monitors. Well, your pulse has calmed down, but you're still an AFib, he said. I'm going to call a cardiologist upstairs and see what we can do here. I didn't need to hear what the cardiologist had to say to know my fate. I study AFib cases, and if breathing techniques, equalization, and meds don't sink the chambers, the next step is to shock the heart to restart it like you would a frozen computer. I seen videos of it, and I was terrified. It was funny. My two heart surgeries never scared me. I knew death was a risk with both of them, but my mortality didn't register all back then, and I greeted them with a shoulder shrug. That night in Nashville, I felt differently about life and death. Can't Hurt Me had changed me. And my last metamorphosis ran much deeper than commercial success and the public's enthusiasm for my story. Writing that book allowed me to process the hell I'd gone through one last time, and publishing it myself gave me a clean slate. People had always assumed a lot of things about me. We're going to put a pause there for a second. And what I wanted to do here really quick with as we do this, I'm going to show you a little bit of who David Goggins is. If you're not familiar with him, you should, because he's a straight shooter. And talk about being never finished. I want to play a video for you guys here, if that's okay. And let David tell you a little something about some motivation. So let's play this video for you guys, and I'll be right back right when it's over, okay? I'll be right back and we'll finish up chapter 2 of this book. So let's do this. Take me off the screen. I'll mute my mic here. Well, I didn't know, recognize about the video is a music video. I thought it was more of a motivation clip, but sorry about that. All right, we're back. Let's continue on here. That's why I said here, can't hurt me, had changed me. And my latest metamorphosis ran much deeper than commercial success and the public's enthusiasm for my story. Writing that book allowed me to process the hell I'd gone through one last time, and publishing it myself gave me a clean slate. People had always assumed a lot of things about me. Can't Hurt Me finally allowed me to speak my truth, and I felt vindicated. I could finally be at peace with my life and all that I put into it and accomplished. Then, right on cue, my heart skipped like a scratch record, and there I was back in life's crosshairs. Merry fucking Christmas, indeed. While Kish called her parents and wiped away my tears, I confronted a bitter possibility. I believed my role on this earth was to suffer and overcome so I could teach others how to do the same. And he says here, but now that period of my life appeared to be over, I had to wonder, was I suddenly expendable? My self-talk flip-flop between feeling sorry for myself and being royally pissed. My anxiety was off the charts. I was not sneering at death like back in the day. I was afraid, desperate for more life. A technician arrived and shaved my chest. She put one electrode on my chest and another on my back. Then the doctor strolled in and asked Kish to grab a seat in the waiting room out front. He read the monitors, glanced over me, and hit the switch. 200 joules flowed through me, and everything went blank. For a fraction of a second, I was suspended between heartbeats. He hit me again, and I screamed like hell as I came to. Kish heard me take the Lord's name in vain all the way in the waiting room, something I never do. That's how much it hurt. But it worked. I was synced. Here's a picture of David in the hospital here. He says, the doctor sent me home with a normal pulse, a battery of tests to be scheduled to make sure that there was nothing structurally wrong with my heart and a tweaked out soul. This is how life works. One second you're talking about the New York Times bestseller list, and then here you go. And then next you run the risk of not being able to live to see tomorrow. It literally happens that quickly. This shit ain't permanent. Life is the ultimate competitor. It takes no days off, and it won't care if you made some money or got a promotion at work. All that means is you're good to go for a moment or two. No matter how badass and successful you think you are, trust me, there is a semi coming around the blind curve ready to smack you in the fucking mouth when you're comfortable as all hell. I knew that. But I also thought my heart issues were in the rearview mirror. Now, I can see how ridiculous that was. When you're always in the grind, you think there'll come a time when the rough road blitz with potholes and littered with blown tires will smooth out. But that is never the case. In fact, if you go through life experiencing that smooth road, you won't be prepared when a pothole opens up on a freshly laid blacktop and rocks you sideways one arm and pleasant evening. That's what Merry Fucking Christmas is all about. It has nothing to do with the holiday. It's about the surprise gifts life has wrapped up just waiting for you to stumble into. Which is another way of saying, I lost something essential in that emergency room. As dawn broke on the drive home, I felt like Samson running bald in the hamster wheel of my mind. I didn't know who I was anymore. Was I still a savage, or was I just another squawking hen? Some people might be put off by the term, but to me, calling someone a savage is the highest compliment. A savage is an individual who defies odds, who has a will that cannot be tamed, and who, when knocked down, will always get back up. If the doctors told me that I had to stop running and working out hard in the gym, I would cancel everything. I'll pull the plug on all future speaking engagements and on my social media channels. I've always been a man of action and service, and I know I would not be able to inspire people by simply talking about things I did in my past. I gave myself one rule before joining social media. This is very important here. If I can't live it, I won't speak it. Before I bedded down that night, I decided that if my body wouldn't cooperate anymore, Can't Hurt Me would be my swan song, and I would disappear. Let me read that line right there, because it's very specific into the next segment that we're going to talk about here in the podcast. If I can't live it, I won't speak it. What do I talk about a lot on this show? About wrestling and wrestling media and fans and everything in between. Why do we tie ourselves up into knots about angles and storylines and act as if we're the smartest people in the room when we're not? If I can't live it, why am I going to talk about it? It's no different from this show. I come in here every week to talk about professional wrestling. I don't know wrestling more than you that's watching or listening to this. My experience in wrestling media has no bearing on how I see myself compared to all of you who are watching and supporting me right now. And it really means a lot to me that you guys do care about the show and care about me. And I do notice that, and I don't take that for granted. But that line right there, to wrap up that wonderful chapter, very raw, tough confessions about, you know, self-doubt, clinging on to drama from a bad childhood. A lot of things that I relate to in that chapter there. If I can't live it, why am I going to speak about it? Very interesting. So that was chapter 2. Of David Goggins Never Finished. I'm sorry for the miscue with the video here. I thought it was going to be like a motivational video, but it just ended up being like some random song that was going on. So I apologize for that. I had a delivery come here from the mail that I had to go grab. So that's why I left just some transparency from your boy. So like I said earlier, I want this process of us reading the book here to you guys every week, give you a little different perspective about life, and then, you know, help you guys out during this mental health awareness month. By the way, like I said, we'll be getting into the evolution part at the end of this show. Evolution is follow-up. Like I said earlier, he tells his personal story in the chapter, and then he gives out advice in the second one, which is called Evolution. And I love the way this book is formatted. It's really dope. And again, I can't stress this enough. Look at this book, Never Finish, Unshackle Your Mind, and Window War Within. So shout out to David Goggins. All right. Let's take our first commercial break here. And when I come back, this segment's not going to be long. I just have some things I need to get off my chest about the wrestling media and what's going on right now. And then we'll get into this week in WWE, we'll get into the questions, and wrap up this episode for you guys. So when we come back, we'll get into this wrestling media intervention. I promise you all, it's not going to be that long. But we'll be right back here on episode 413 of the Hoos Podcast. We'll be right back. Welcome back to the Hoots Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. You see the title of this week's episode called Wrestling Media Intervention. Coming off the heels of what happened in Lyon, France at the Backlash press scrum, where a reporter, one way or another, got scolded, got into a whole scuttlebutt of, you know, people mad at Triple H because he called out Fightful and PW Insider and looking for actual credible sources. The reporter talks to John Pollock and Brandon Thurston, who are
knee-deep in this allegations of a Vince McMahon and everything, and I think those guys are doing a great job. I really don't have any point of contention toward those guys. Really, everything that's going on with that, and then Seltzer taking passive-aggressive shots at Sean Ross Sapp and thinking that his way of doing things is on another level, but just because of the amount of years he's been hoodwinking and lying to the audience for so many years. I'm going to just say this as somebody who's been within the wrestling media bubble for the last 10 years, where you think that I'm on a high level or not within that realm. That's up to your perspective. I really don't care. What I will say right now is that there is too much grab-assing on both sides, whether you're all the way WWE or you're all the way AEW. I know a lot of people will come on here and listen to this podcast and be like, well, Josh, you did a semi-call. What the hell is wrong with AEW? So you clearly have a bias towards AEW. No, I don't have a bias towards AEW. We ended the segment a couple weeks ago because I don't want to watch it anymore. I've lost interest in it. I don't have a sense or purpose to watch it anymore. And when I was watching it, like I said before, the premise of what the hell's wrong with AEW is not to point out that AEW existing is a bad thing or I wanted it to go out of business. I did this segment to point out the flaws and the over hysteria and hyperbole that's attached to every conversation that goes down with an AEW show. Because you go on Twitter during a live Dynamite and there's people with blue check marks who act like this promotion does absolutely nothing wrong. Everything is great. Every match is good. All storylines are good. Everything is fine. Like that GIF, you know, with the flames around. Everything is fine. There's nothing to see here. And, you know, a lot of the stuff with the tribalism can be added on to the situation. But really, at the end of the day, I think collectively, and I said this before, but it needs to be said again, I think collectively, we are doing the wrestling fans a disservice in 2024. In the way that the shows are covered, well, at least on an audio platform or a video platform, the framing of how articles are written and reports, the fact that, and I know a lot of these sites are driven via aggregation stuff, and I work for a site that is very big on it. You know, if you see a report from Meltzer and Alvarez, you probably will see it on the site that I work for. You know, and I know how this game works, and I want people to succeed. And being a wrestling media member should be a privilege, should not be a right. You know, there's too many people that walk around as if their shit don't stink, and you know who they are. I don't need to say it. There's too many egos. The tribalism is just comical at this point. Just like who gets allowed or doesn't get allowed to be a participant in these press scrums, or either regardless of the promotion. We got people backstabbing each other. We got people, you know, gaslighting each other. We got people within the field just looking out for their best interests, you know. And the copying and pasting is bad. The spoilers are bad. The overemphasis on Meltzer's bookie takes and star ratings are just absolutely ridiculous in 2024 that we're still talking about that shit, but it's because it has no merit or substance to it or any credibility. And more, it's just a never-ending dick measuring contest, to be very frank with you all. And as somebody who's been in this field for 10 years and I've seen a lot of people come and go, you know, I was putting over a lot of the good YouTube content creators that I see on here, and I wanted to give them their flowers because they deserve it. They do. They do deserve credit. And I don't want to say that all aspects of wrestling media is bad in 2024, because that's not true. I mean, you're looking at someone here, and I'm saying that humbly, that I feel that what I do within this show and with my transfers, more importantly, is doing something right by the wrestling fans. And I take a lot of pride with that. I really do. I take a lot of pride in the work that I put out to wrestling fans, because I'm not trying to mislead people. You know, my agenda, if I had an agenda behind my transcripts, is to have it as a point of reference for me as I lean closer to starting to do wrestling play-by-play for real instead of typing it out. You know, I've always said I wanted to call WrestleMania. That's always been my dream. So if I have an agenda with anything that I do, it's with my transfers, because I use it as a point of reference to call wrestling matches and understanding how sequences are supposed to go and writing out TV formats and writing out dialogue and educating myself along the way with watching each show. Whether it's Raw, SmackDown, a PLE, and Bumblefuck, Idaho, it really doesn't matter. I'm doing it for myself. But this podcast and my transcripts are not predicated on which promotion that I like better or who I think in my head that I have a better relationship, because I got stooges on the inside giving me information that I should not know of. You know, and that's another thing too. Dick measuring contests of whose source was right and whose source is wrong, who got this first, who didn't. There's no literacy within the wrestling media, yet the same people that call for media literacy don't apply those traits themselves. You know, I find a lot of things and complaints within wrestling media to be very hypocritical and just in life. Think, when you hear something, consider the source. Consider the source. Have some self-respect and self-awareness to know who's being genuine with their content and good at their craft. Not putting a blind eye to another media member just because they mark out for your favorite wrestling promotion. Like John Alba, a friend of mine that I've known now for almost a decade. Very talented at his craft. Very talented as a writer. Very talented as a broadcaster. I mean, the guy is now doing television. His lifelong dream, doing sports television in the same state that he was born and raised in. Think about that. John Alba is credible. Sean Ross Sapp, to a certain extent, credible. Mike Johnson from PW Insider, credible. My guy and my mentor, Steve Uhlhausen, who got my start in the transcript world when he was doing wrestling on DAZN. Again, another guy, credible. Justin LaBar, who does good stuff on Busted Open, credible. My guy, Hoodie, Jonathan Hood, I would say another guy that's credible. John Pollock, I mentioned earlier, Brandon Thurston. There's a lot of good, talented people that you know who they are, and they're not going to bullshit you. And I just feel bad in a lot of ways that a lot of us are still clinging on to the Dave Meltzer and the Brianna Alvarez way of looking and talking about professional wrestling. It's just so outdated. And who wants to listen to a podcast that's filled with snarkiness and just glass half empty approaches and outlooks on the business as a whole? Like, who wants to listen or watch that shit? I'd rather spend an hour looking at nothing but drywall than having to listen to a Brian Alvarez or Dave Meltzer review of any wrestling show. And that's a shoot. While we still have these silly debates about ratings and whether or not AEW's picking momentum or not, and whatever controversy of the day it is within wrestling media, the wrestling echo chamber. What I'm saying here is I'm not telling any lies. I'm not telling any lies. We are doing a disservice to the wrestling fans. We really are. And I'm not happy about it because, you know, the conversations that I see on social media will start making you question your IQ at times. Just the way that people describe things, the way that the nature of most wrestling conversations go, even with fans these days, they're so snarky and inside baseball and trying to act like we're the smartest person in the room. You can't. And I'm saying this as somebody who's been in this field for 10 years and knowing what actual media looks like because I went to a broadcasting and a media school. You cannot go through and analyze professional wrestling in the same lens that you could analyze the NFL or just any general sport because it's not a sport. And here's the thing, coming from the guy who covers and transcribes wrestling matches every single week for the last 10 years, I have never once looked at this business as a sport that needs to be analyzed within that context about wins and losses having to matter, which title means more than the other. I'm listening to Busted Open the other day, and they're having an argument about which title has more prestige, from Cody's title to Damian Priest's title. And I'm like, who gives a shit at the end of the day? When you don't have a podcast that's filled with former wrestlers, you find yourself in some spaces that you're finding yourself going down a bad slope because you listen to a lot of people that don't know what they're talking about. I'll even throw myself in that case too. I'll never come here and tell you all that I know everything that's supposed to be done the right way or the wrong way of professional wrestling. I come here, I give you my observations as somebody who's been covering the industry for the last 10 years, and I leave it at that. And I just speak for myself. But every week, it's always a booking complaint, or this, or that thing, and it's just so fucking nauseating and pointless at this point. This week, oh, Jey Uso is getting nepotism booking because I heard that phrase on a show the other day that Jey Uso is getting nepotism booking because Roman Reigns is not around. I never even heard that phrase in my life before. Nepotism booking. It's just ridiculous. It really is. So honestly, and I wanted to do this because not a lot of people will have the balls to say what I'm saying right now. And that's the thing. We're so tied in on what booking is supposed to go through our lens. You know, it's a subjective form of entertainment. There's not really a right or wrong answer. You cannot analyze professional wrestling as if it's a professional sport. I respect all these men and women who put their bodies on the line for us each and every single week during their matches. I have the utmost respect for all of them. And I do appreciate their athleticism. But this is not a sport. It's not a sport. I love this business. I've loved it ever since I was a kid. Professional wrestling has always been the biggest escape from my life. The biggest mental escape from my life has always been wrestling outside of music. And wrestling will always be a big part of my life and in my heart. And it's hard to be a fan at times of the business when I have to see the stuff that we see on social media all the time or these podcasts that I listen to. And you know the good ones from the bad ones. I'm going to give a shout out to my boy Stat Guy Greg and Peter Roseberg. They're still kicking ass with TP. You know the good ones from the bad ones. Let's put those on a pedestal and stop shedding a spotlight on the clout chasers and the guys that are just doing takes for the sake of doing takes and asking about Taylor Swift at press scrums and all this shit. We need to do a better job. All of us. There's no accountability when people are wrong about a report that they do. There's no accountability in the way that the guys with the blue check marks and all the followers carried himself on air and with a bravado that their shit don't stink, which is not the case 99.9% of the time. There should be more appreciation for the talented female content creators. They're doing a great job. I mentioned Weezy Blonde earlier. You got another girl, Stephanie Hype, who does a great job doing a lot of articles and stuff during her career. And the list goes on and on. I have no regrets getting into the wrestling media field. This is my career. I chose it. And I'm not ashamed to be a wrestling media member. What I'm ashamed of is the state of where it's at and the fact that we're still doing this copy and pasting like it's 2014. And the only way to post news and making an emphasis that the news and the rumor and innuendo is the most important thing within the echo chamber. And the only basis of it is what Dave Meltzer thinks for that day or what Brianna Alvarez thinks for that day. It's a problem. It really is. There's a lot of great talented people there. Phil Lindsay does great stuff on Bleach Report. Do I agree with everything that he says about wrestling? No, but I don't have any personal issues with the guy. Shout out to him, another Chicago guy. You know, I respect my colleagues, and I respect the people who do right by people and do right by the fans. What I don't have respect for is Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez and the other clout chasers within this field. And you know who they are. That's what I don't have respect for. And I feel I have the right to speak on this because I've been through this for the last 10 years. The politics need to stop. The ageism needs to stop. The fact that we're putting women down now for their own wrestling takes and perspectives is just ridiculous. And we need to do a better job as a collective. And that's that. Let's take another break here. When we come back, we'll talk about what happened this week at WWE right here on the Hoots Podcast. Guys, welcome back to Hoots Podcast. Time to talk about what happened this week in WWE. Let me look at my rundown here so I don't miss any important notes here. We are just a week out away from the King of the Queen, King and Queen of the Ring tournaments. That's been a lot of fun to document. I've always said, man, for me personally, one of my favorite parts of doing play-by-play articles is covering tournaments, whether it's the G1, you know, other tournaments that I covered over years, the New Japan Cup, basically all the tournaments for New Japan Pro Wrestling, the Cruiserweight Classic brings back some good memories. I remember covering those when they first started. I think I've covered every single thing that had to do with NXT UK. I could be wrong, but I don't know if I missed one episode of something or whatever, but I've covered every single NXT UK PLE that ever was. And the United Kingdom Championship tournaments. I remember the tournament when they did the first Heritage Cup. I did that tournament as well. I tournaments outside of like transcribing a promo or like my personal favorite match to transcribe is a triple threat match. Those are the ones that I do the best in. But for me, like, I love covering tournaments, and it's a lot of fun. The men and the women are doing a great job on both Raw and SmackDown. You know, it's cool Baron Corbin to get some nice response from that crowd on SmackDown this past week in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania against Carmelo Hayes. Carmelo Hayes is still pissing people off. We heard Bobby Lashley's rant about the entitlement for these new guys coming in. Montez Ford doubled down on that on his appearance in the Bump yesterday. So I thought that's interesting. Maybe that's the angle that they take here with their faction. So I thought that was pretty cool. Nia Jax and Naomi, I thought I had a very good match. Liked it. Trying to remember off the top of my head for SmackDown. Randy Orton defeated AJ Styles in the main event. Another stellar match. Randy will be taking on Carmelo Hayes tomorrow night as I'm recording this on a Thursday, so that should be a pretty good match. Nia Jax will be taking on Jay Cargill. That's the first time matchup, singles match. That should be an interesting sight to see. Bianca Belair will be taking on Tiffany Stratton. Tiffany Stratton beat Mia Yim at a live event this past weekend. So you get two big marquee matches for the women on the women's side for the Queen of the Ring on the SmackDown side. And then we already know who the semifinals is for Raw. It'll be Lyra Valkyria against Io Sky. That's going to be a barn burner. I thought Io and Shayna had a pretty good match on Raw this week. And same thing with Lyra and Shayna. I got to say, man, the ladies have brought the goods during this tournament. They really have. I'm curious to see what's going to happen tomorrow night. On the men's side, they'll have Tama Tonga against L.A. Knight. Yeah. So they'll have L.A. Knight going on there. Randy Orton and Carmelo Hayes. I can definitely see Randy Orton winning that one. Do we get Randy Orton and L.A. Knight in the semifinals from the SmackDown side? I don't know. Possibly. Is it more likely to be Randy Orton and Tama Tonga? Most likely. Could it be a scenario where Tiffany Stratton ends up representing SmackDown at the Queen of the Ring in Saudi Arabia? That's a possibility, too. There's a lot of different options here. I think I'm leaning more towards Nia Jax as the days go by. I think she's probably the more rightful winner to win it outright from everybody. And as she gets her opportunity to go after Bayley and the WWE Women's Championship. So you got options there. Then on the Raw side, for the men's, the semifinal will be Gunther and Jey Uso. A lot of people this week were throwing hissy fits over the fact that Jey Uso defeated Ilya Dragunov in the main event of Raw. Main event, Jey Uso defeated Ilya Dragunov in the main event of Monday Night Raw. And now people are saying Ilya Dragunov is buried. Again, back to what I was just saying in the previous segment, stop looking at professional wrestling through the lens of Dave Meltzer and Brian Alvarez. You'll be doing yourself a major benefit to yourself and your overall sanity and consciousness by not looking at the business through those guys' lens or the snarky people from WrestleMania. Dave Meltzer is not the only source of what's the pulse of wrestling fans. Make it stop. Get some help, as Michael Jordan would say. Anyways, oh my God, Ilya Dragunov got buried. I can't believe Triple H didn't give us Gunther and Ilya Dragunov. Oh, I'm pissed this match not happened at Saudi Arabia yet. This is the PLE that I bitch about every single year. So you want Gunther and Dragunov to tap it out in Saudi, right? Patience is a virtue, man. As Rock says, man, we're in the long game. You got another PLE that's taking place in Berlin, Germany at the end of August. You tell me that you can't wait 3 months to see Gunther fight Ilya Dragunov at that show? Who knows? Okay, let's say they have the match with each other. And guess what? Let's draw out the stipulation. Since Gunther has so much of a mental advantage over him. Let's say Gunther does defeat Ilya Dragunov. If Gunther wins, Dragunov has to join Imperium. I'm telling you right now, and you may not want to hear it, but Ilya Dragunov, one way or another, will be joining Imperium. That's my feel. I don't have any sources behind that. I'm not running any secondhand information to you guys. This is my observation. I think one way or another, Ilya Dragunov will join Imperium. And before you say it doesn't make sense, it does make sense, because just in the same way that Sami Zayn was part of the Bloodline, Ilya Dragunov could be a great fit in Imperium and destroy them within. So don't be in a rush to say that doesn't make sense, because it does make sense. Get closer to, be close to your enemies. That's all I'm going to say. I take a swig of water really quick. Oh, man. Can't go wrong with H2O. Excuse me. Let's talk about this. Cody Rhodes and Logan Paul from SmackDown last week. Another point of contention. There's a lot of point of contention, you know. Can never satisfy wrestling fans. Wrestling fans are so... they're probably even more morose than Star Wars fans, and that's really saying something. And almost as paranoid as Chicago Bears fans. But that's another story for another time. Oh, man. But a big point of contention this week was, oh, really? You're really going to have Logan Paul fight Cody Rhodes for the Undisputed Championship? It's a Saudi show. It's not the end of the world. You really think Logan Paul is going to lose any stock for his value by losing to Cody Rhodes in a one-off match? Just because you determine a new challenger doesn't mean it's like the WWE Universe mode on 2K24 and you start feuding with each other for 3 straight months. It doesn't work that way. Understand what this PLE is. What I always find funny about wrestling fans when we start having bills towards the Saudi Arabia PLEs is that they put so much of an emphasis on the booking of it. Aren't you the same people that always talk about, oh, I want to boycott the show, I don't feel great about it, it doesn't mesh well with my morals and ethics? But you want to have concrete stories and in-depth booking and yada, 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 going to a Saudi Arabia show that only had 3 weeks to build into it. Pick a fucking lane. That's what I'm trying to express here this week. Pick a fucking lane. Be about it. If you don't care about these Saudi Arabia shows, why are you making a mountain out of a molehill out of what's being booked on it? You're telling me that Cody Rhodes and Logan Paul would not be a good match? So Cody, like, needs his next rivalry right now? Oh, the WrestleMania lull. The WrestleMania hangover. My ass. Look at the business. Stop letting fucking X being your barometer of what's over or not. A bunch of sensitive-ass marks on Twitter every day, opining about what's right and wrong with the wrestling business is not the pulse of every wrestling fan. Enough already. They're going to have the contract signing tomorrow with Cody Rhodes and Logan Paul. And I'm sure we'll get more context clues, because once again, this is a episodic television show. They actually put on television and internet booking supercards every week, like the other promotion. Oh, it doesn't make sense. And look, it's fighting Cody Rhodes. Oh, okay. Yeah, just like it didn't make sense for Logan to fight Roman Reigns at Saudi Arabia in 2022. The guy's a draw. It's a prize fight. It doesn't need a story. It's a prize fight. Especially for a show. For the purpose of it, it's not storylines, it's money. I don't know what we're missing here in the translation of all that. So we have that. I really thought the women on Monday Night Raw had a very, very strong night. From the matches to the character development that's going on with Liv Morgan recently. Her program with Becky Lynch, I've been very excited for that. I'm looking forward to their match at King and Queen of the Ring. I mentioned the tournament matches already. I like the vibe that I've seen. Even the stuff backstage with Maxine Dupri you know, and that stuff with Chad Gable bullying the Alpha Academy, that stuff is tremendous. I've been really digging that stuff. Damian Priest and Drew McIntyre, you know, kicking off the show, their promo was fantastic. As the kids say, that Priest cooked Drew McIntyre. Drew McIntyre is still talking shit about CM Punk as the days go by. Man, I can't wait for CM Punk to get cleared. That's going to be tremendous. But as I was saying here, what I want to express here is that, you know, we'll throw it out there. Do you think it's time for Priest to be a transitional champion? Do you give the title to Drew McIntyre at Clash at the Castle? Do you believe that Punk and McIntyre need the world title to be attached to this feud? I don't think so personally, but that's just my opinion. Let's see. What else you would like me to talk about here? Excuse me. Just give me 1 second. Pull out my notes here for my transcripts. You know, I wouldn't be opposed if Priest fought McIntyre at Clash of the Castle and Punk costs McIntyre again in Clash of the Castle. You want to add some more real heat between those two guys? It'll be really on site. And honestly, I'm going to throw this out there. I don't know if anybody's mentioned this on any other shows, but do it this week. Make this match happen. CM Punk against Drew McIntyre at SummerSlam in Cleveland. Hell in a Cell.
Oh, man.
Hell in a Cell. So you can do Hell in a Cell for Punk and McIntyre. That's how I do it. Anyways, let's wrap this segment up with talk a little bit about NXT. NXT is building up for their Battleground PLE taking place at the USC Apex. I saw a little couple pictures of that venue. That's going to be a nice, interesting setup there for how they have the stage and stuff. I'm looking forward to that show. That's going to be pretty cool. Right now, they're having qualified matches for the inaugural NXT Women's North American Championship match. Right now, we have Sol Ruka and Lash Legend who qualified. Well, I guess shout out to Sol Ruka. By the way, very good waterfall. That girl's hot as hell. But her, Sol and Izzy Dame had a very, very good match at NXT this week to kick off the show. I really dig that match. I think Izzy Dame has a lot of potential. The girl's like, I don't know, 24, 25 years old, just getting her start in the business. She's very, very talented for a girl her size. Like, she's more of a taller frame. But I liked what I saw for that match. Those two ladies killed it. Lash Legend defeated Ivy Nile to qualify. We'll have more qualified matches next week with Fallon Henley and Thea Hale. Jaden Parker and Brittany Reese, talking about onside, those two were beating the crap out of each other at ringside. It wouldn't stop. I'm really digging the vibe of NXT right now. I told you guys last week that I'm planning to go to my first NXT show at the Performance Center when I'm in Orlando on June 4th. So I'm looking forward to that. But I've just been really enjoying the vibe of NXT, and it's like everything that's going on with the angles and the storylines, it's like it's on site. Everybody wants to throw hands. Gallus made their return at the end of the show. We had a dope match with Javon Evans and Oliver Carter. My bad, Ora Mensa from Metaphor. That was a sick match. Next week we're gonna have a three-way number one contenders match for Obafemi's North American title in the background. It'll be Wesley taking on Josh Briggs and Ivar. That match is going to be pretty good, too. And, yeah, man, NXT is cooking up some good stuff right now. You know, I think we're going to get closer to seeing Trick Williams and Noah Dar. I'm pretty certain that's going to be the title match at Battleground. So I don't have a problem with that. I don't see Noah Dar beating Trick Williams, but Noam Dar is definitely a good first opponent for Trick Williams and this title reign that we're watching right now. Really quick, before we get into our next segments and stuff like that, I wanted to play something really quick from Eric Bischoff in 83 Weeks. Little gift to you guys for watching the show. I always enjoy doing this stuff for you guys. And video content is very, very, very important. And The Undertaker. No, my bad. I'll do that next week. I'll do The Undertaker and stuff for Busted Open next week. But for this one, I wanted to play this clip here from last week's 83 Weeks with Eric Bischoff with Comrade Thompson. And in this clip, Eric Bischoff talks about the importance of promos on a higher level than matches. So let's play a clip here, and let's play this for you guys. And this is how we'll wrap up this week in WWE here. So shout out to Eric and Conrad for 83 Weeks. Here we go.
Leland Patterson says, this is over on YouTube, 83weeks.com. Hey, Eric, not sure how much you keep up with Raw, but I believe the best story right now is CM Punk and Drew McIntyre. Both are dealing with injuries and can't work matches, but it might be the 1A program right now behind the Bloodline. Speaking of the Bloodline, I saw a comment about Tama Tonga. It said within a couple weeks, WWE took a mid-card guy from New Japan and made him look like a main eventer, while AEW took a main event guy from New Japan and Okada and turned him into a mid-carder. It's almost like story works more than wrestling. Funny how that goes. Anyways, keep up the work. I love your insight on things. What do you think of the Drew McIntyre CM Punk story? Because, man, every time they come on, people are flocking. Like, those segments, those quarter hours are doing really, really well. And there's no physicality. It's just guys talking. And it's funny that we're saying that like it's really, it's this revelation, because JR and I recently talked about The Rock's 1999. And that's the year where they did, you know, Rock, This Is Your Life. It did an 8.4 rating. It's one of the highest rated segments in wrestling television history. And at that point was the highest rated quarter hour in Raw history. And there was no wrestling. There's no matches. There's no physicality. It's just guys talking. Matches are important, but man, entertainment's where it's at. And Punk and McIntyre got them going right now, man.
They do. And I'm looking forward to that match. I think it's going to be exciting. And again, it's look, you have these camps on the internet, in the internet wrestling community, right? You've got your Dave Meltzer types where everything is, you know, match quality. And even that is subjective, by the way. But that they come from that, you know, five-star Dave Meltzer match quality mentality that absolutely pays zero attention to character development or story, despite protestations to the contrary. Where that camp is like, oh, man, there's only 20 minutes of wrestling on a one-hour show, or 40 minutes of wrestling in a two-hour, oh, my God. And they actually, you know, post things on social media that compares actual in-ring wrestling between the companies like it fucking matters, you clowns, you pretend experts, kind of like Dave. They're following in Dave's footsteps. They're analyzing and studying like Dave Meltzer does. But the part that they don't get, because neither Dave or the people that think like him has actually ever produced anything, ever. And what you'll find, I think, if you really study and analyze, as you just briefly described, is a combination. I'm not suggesting that great wrestling matches aren't important. They certainly are. I, for one, am entertained. I'm enjoying watching Ospreay. I'm enjoying watching Okada. I'm enjoying watching some of that purely for the physical ability that I'm seeing, the talent, the execution, the athleticism, the timing of some of it. But I also look at it and go, eh, it's never going to really matter that much, because it's only appealing to a fraction of a fraction of the overall wrestling audience. And they're doing it at the expense of also creating great story and characters. My point is that by the time CM Punk and Drew actually lock up, they will have been telling a fascinating story and building a strong foundation of engagement and emotional involvement before the bell ever rings, so that the match they have, and I'm confident that it will, providing everybody stays healthy, the match they have will be the cherry on top. But it ain't the pie. And the Dave Meltzer types and the Tony Khan types, and those who want to book for the internet and the chat rooms and cage match rankings or whatever the fuck that's called, they're missing the most important part. They don't understand how to do it. It's not in their instinctive warehouse. They don't have the tools to play in that area. So they rely on dream matches and bringing in guys who are exceptionally good at their abilities in the ring and hoping that that's going to make them a challenger brand. It won't, it hasn't, and it never will.
There you go. Shout out to Eric Bischoff and Eric and Conrad Tots for that clip. Check out A3 Weeks. They do a great job each and every single week. I don't know. That's a wrap for this week in WWE. Before we get to our main event segment, we do a segment here on the podcast at Hoots every single week, otherwise known as the Klein of the Week.
I'm not Klein. 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 You're big. Klein. 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 Klein.
More time for good men.
I'm not Klein. 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 You're big. Klein. 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 Klein.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, the Klein of the Week this week. Ladies and gentlemen, the Klein of the Week this week goes to Warner Brothers Discovery and losing the NBA to NBC. I saw this news the other day. Looks like one of my favorite sports shows of all time, Inside the NBA, is going away. A staple of my childhood and my practically my entire life of being a sports fan, Inside the NBA has been around. Shout out to Ernie Johnson and the crew, and Charles Barkley and those churros. I saw that news the other day, and I'm like, you gotta be kidding me. Like, you're really getting rid of Inside the NBA? This is what we're doing now? But, yeah, Warner Bros. Discovery is definitely Clown of the Week nominee, especially if you're keeping on AEW Collision and Dynamite, but you want to get rid of the Inside of the NBA. Like, seriously, something's wrong with you. Like, you need serious help. But let's continue on here. Let's start off with, before we get to our main event segment, I wanted to go over really quick the Bears schedule. I'm not going to make my predictions yet. We'll wait for it towards the training camp time and stuff like that. I'll make more formal prediction, but I just wanted to do this as an excrement impression. Since we're not doing What the Hell's Wrong with AEW anymore, I wanted to give a little something of that to you guys here. So here we go. Week one from Soldier Field, the Chicago Bears take on Will Levis and the Tennessee Titans. From there, for week two, we take a trip to NRG Stadium in Houston, Texas on Sunday Night Football as the Chicago Bears take on the Houston Texans. And week three, live on CBS from Lucas Oil Stadium, it's the Matt Eberflus Bowl as the Chicago Bears take on the Indianapolis Colts. Then we transition to week four back in Soldier Field as the Chicago Bears take on the Los Angeles Rams. Sunday, October 6th is the Ryan Poles Bowl, the bowl of the biggest haul in the history of sports. The Chicago Bears take on the Carolina Panthers. Then, coming up October 13th, week 7, from Tottenham Hotspur Stadium in beautiful London, England, it's the Chicago Bears taking on the Jacksonville Jaguars. I wonder if that match would be, if that football game would be justified. Then we go to a bye for week 8. Then come back week 9, live from the Commanders Field, it's the Chicago Bears taking on the Washington Commanders. From there we go straight to Arizona at State Farm Stadium, the home of WrestleMania 26, as the Chicago Bears take on Arizona Cardinals on CBS. That's going to be a late afternoon game. From there we go back home, November 10th, We have the Chicago Bears at home taking on the New England Patriots. Then we get two back-to-back home divisional games as the Bears take on those brutal Green Bay Packers and the Minnesota Vikings. Then coming up Thursday, November 28th, for Thanksgiving, the Thanksgiving tradition will feature the Chicago Bears as the Chicago Bears take on the Detroit Lions. From there, we go taking a trip to Levi's Stadium, the home of WrestleMania 31, as the Chicago Bears take on the San Francisco 69ers. From there, we go to Monday Night Football in Minnesota as the Bears take on the Minnesota Vikings. We wrap up our home schedule with two games. First, the Detroit Lions come in on December 22nd. From there, we go the day after Christmas on Thursday Night Football as the Chicago Bears take on the Seattle Seahawks. Then we wrap up the season in that dump known as Lambeau Field as the Chicago Bears take on the Green Bay Packers. Times and networks are subject to change, but that is your official schedule for the 2024 Chicago Bears. But on that note, when we come back, we got worse than anything to do on the podcast this week, and that is to answer your questions for this week's Back Porch Q&A session and get into Evolution number 2 here. I Never Finished with David Goggins, right here on the Hoops Podcast. We'll be right back. Back to the Hoots Podcast, ladies and gentlemen. We got one more segment to do here on the podcast this week. I want to thank you all. For those who are watching live, please do us a favor and like this video and subscribe to our channel. If there's anything that's on your mind about the state of wrestling media in 2024 and you want to express that to us, please feel free to share your thoughts in the comments section on YouTube, on our YouTube channel, or hit me up on Twitter at the Hoots Podcast and let me know what your thoughts on my perspective on the whole situation as a whole, and I'd love to hear back from you guys. But we have questions this week, as we do each and every week here on the podcast of Hoots. We got a loaded one this week, and it's time for the Back Porch Q&A session, and it's tradition here on the podcast of Hoots. We do something called throwing up the X. That's right, we're going to throw up the X for the good brother Chris Zaletta at XTeamZaletta24X on the Twitter machine. Let's see what Chris has for us this week on the podcast. Here we go. Well, Luce, here's some questions for the Q&A this week. Does Baron Corbin turn back heel before SummerSlam? Unless there is a scenario where Braun Breaker gets traded to SmackDown, I could possibly see that being an angle where Adam Pearce, for whatever reason, is trying to be too protective of Braun Breaker, and Nick Aldis doesn't care and just wants him to be him. Like, you could do a trade where Braun Breaker goes to SmackDown and you bring somebody back to Raw. I'm not sure who that would be, but unless, like, you reunite the Wolf Dogs, I don't see that being the case. But that's a good question. Who wins Gunther versus Jay on Raw this Monday? I'm going to go with Gunther. Any idea where Raquel is? I don't know. My thoughts go out to her. You know, I know she's been dealing with a lot of health issues and skin-related issues, which is very unfortunate. But I hope she's in good spirits, and hopefully you see her back on TV soon because she's very talented. And, you know, some people may be hit and miss with her personality, or the only thing that she does is flex her back, but I think she's a good wrestler. I think she's a good person too. So hopefully we'll get to see her back on TV soon. Thoughts on the NFL schedule release yesterday? Kind of mid. I think it's kind of ridiculous that the Bears are only getting three prime time games this season, especially with the fact of all the offseason moves and the hype with Caleb Williams. I'm surprised that we only got three of them. But all in all, same old, same old. I really try not to overthink the NFL schedules and stuff like that. It is what it is at this point. But, yeah, hopefully we'll see which teams rise to the occasion this football season. Thoughts on the NBA media rights leaving TNT and possibly going back to NBC? It's unfortunate, like I said earlier, because I've always been a big fan of Inside the NBA. I always will be a fan of that. But I also grew up with NBA on NBC and seeing my Chicago Bulls here make the New York Knicks their bitches during the late 90s, during that Jordan era. And, yeah, I definitely miss the NBA on NBC. I remember watching games on that network with my dad when I was a kid, watching Bulls games on NBC. So that's pretty cool. I mean, I don't know if Bob Costas is going to come back and do play-by-play, but, you know, it'd be interesting to see Mike Tirico get into the NBA bag and see where that goes from there. But it's definitely a big loss for TNT and Warner Brothers Discovery as a whole. So that's my thoughts on that. What else? Is Cody versus Logan Paul title for title? I think right now it is, but it could change tomorrow during the contract signing. And I think that probably be the case where Logan finds a loophole where he doesn't have to defend his title, but still sucker punches Cody. I think that's the route that they go tomorrow. So, what else? Do you think the Iconics return to wrestling at some point? I mean, I sort of hope so. I know they're both doing a great job raising their kids, and I think Peyton Royce is pregnant again, so salute to her and Sean Spears. That's definitely one of those cases of somebody outkicking their coverage, but Sean Spears is a cool dude. You know, Peyton Royce is definitely one of the chicks that I had a crush on over the years, and she's really, really hot. But I would definitely would like to see him back on TV sometime. When the time's right for them. When do you think we see Jake Paul step into WWE? Probably the next time that WWE is at in Saudi Arabia. It might be Crown Jewel. That'd probably be my guess. If Jake Paul, maybe they do a tag match with the Paul brothers, taking out the Usos or something like that. I don't know. We'll have to see how that works out. Danielson reportedly wants to finish at WrestleDream. How will you line up and book these next few months of opponents-wise for pay-per-views for him? Oh, man, that's a good question. So, obviously, WrestleDream will probably be in the Washington area. Brian Danielson has said many a times that this is going to be his last year of being a full-time wrestler. And I respect that decision. I really don't need to see him in any other matches with the other guys for the Blackpool Cuckold Club. I really don't care. I didn't care for the Bryan Danielson Moxley matches when they were happening last year, and I don't need to see another one now, so I'll throw that out the window. You know, if it's something where Bryan Danielson ends his career in a match against Darby Allin, I think that'd be pretty cool. You know, you could do another Bryan and Swerve match. I know they fought each other in the Continental Classic, but you could have that be a rivalry for the title. Maybe you do Bryan Danielson and Edge. The fact that we haven't had Bryan Danielson and Malakai Black in a feud, besides the factions going after each other, is kind of a crime, in my opinion. At least a one-on-one singles match, I think, with those guys would be pretty good. Those are the ones off the top of my head, though. Maybe one more match with MJF. And hell, once Adam Cole's back doing matches, maybe you can do Bryan Danielson match with Adam Cole. So there goes that. All right. What else we got here for Chris? He says, oh, that's it for questions for Chris. Thank you, good brother Chris, for the questions this week. As always, I appreciate you, brother. Make sure you follow Chris at, by the way, at XT1124X on Twitter. So shout out to Chris. Our last set of questions this week comes from the good brother Mike Rubio at Main Event Sword down there in Houston, Texas. He says, what up, Oos? I had to join the backports for the last full week of my classes at work. Here are a lot of questions as a lot has popped up this week. I appreciate you, brother, reaching out as always. What do you think of Diana Taurasi and other WNBA veterans taking verbal jabs at new phenom Caitlin Clark? Is it rookie fun or more like targeting the new gal? Probably a mixture of both. It's just petty. Diana Taurasi is petty, so it's not really a surprise to anybody. So that's my thoughts on that. Caleb Williams was shown throwing some slant routes in the Bears' social media with the catch, and how far will they go? Fancy less than optimistic, but where do they land at least in the divisional rank to end next season? realistically, I could probably say second or third, but if I had my guess and be really diligent with it, I do believe that the Bears will have a chance to finish second in the North this year. I do believe that. I'm not buying the Packers and their roster. I know Jordan Love was good last year, but I need to see more, and the Vikings are going to take a step back. So it's definitely looking more to second or third place for sure in the North for the Bears. Which Bears matchup are you looking forward to the most? The Texans for Sunday Night Football in primetime, maybe? I'm looking forward to that. I don't know if the Bears will win that game in Houston, so I don't know as much as I'm looking forward to a game that where they're going to lose. But, you know, definitely interested in seeing that London game. Seeing the Bears embarrass TK in England would be fantastic. A better Chicago entity embarrassing a clan in this manner in international waters is just absolutely hilarious to me. You know, looking forward to seeing them, you know, go against the 49ers later this season. I think that's going to be a good game. Them against the Patriots should be pretty cool. The division games are always a mixed bag, so the schedule is not that great with interesting opponents, to say the least. I'll say that. I mean, it is the AFC South, so it is what it is, but those are the other ones that stand out the most to me. Have you watched any of The Rock's new football league on TV? The St. Louis Battlehawks and Birmingham teams have some solid dynamics, but others not really. No, brother, I haven't watched 1 second of the UFL. I haven't watched it yet. Did you pay attention to Kendrick Lamar and Drake's beef? I like both guys' music at least, but Kendrick proves superior to Drake according to many observers, including me. Yeah, I have. I mean, it's been hard not to see that. So, I would say, for me, I would go with Kendrick as well. I think Drake had some good responses here and there, but I think on overall rap skills, I think Kendrick got the victory. But everything surrounding it, and then the security guard that got shot, I didn't think that was cool, to be honest with you. So, you know, it's a rap beef, but people should not be injured over rap beefs. That's just ridiculous. Who finished better in their division this year? Chicago Bears or the WNBA Chicago Sky with Angel Reese and Camila Cardoso? Well, I don't really watch the WNBA, Mike, so I wouldn't know how to go about that. You know, I'm not really sure. I'm just going to say the Bears by default. And that's no knock towards the Sky, because I know they won a championship a couple of years ago, but I'm just not familiar with the WNBA, and I don't watch it as much. Can you believe that Dennis Rodman was on a show the other day and the graphics listed among his accolades former member of the NWO? Hey, man, you saw The Last Dance? the NWO is for life, for real. What is the most memorable NWO moment for me? Oh, that's a good one. Outside of Hogan's initial turn at the Bash at the Beach, I think for me, my quintessential NWO moment was the whole angle with him, with Hollywood Hulk Hogan and Sting. I know that Starrcade 97 got a lot of vitriol and complaints for it, and rightfully so. But that whole buildup with where the NW was at that time and the Crow Sting character, that was my favorite part of WCW and the NWO at that time. Speaking of WCW things, have you checked out Eric Bischoff's new podcast, Wise Choices? Yes, I do. I usually get updated with what's going on with AEW on Wise Choices because I'm not watching it anymore. So I listen to Wise Choices during my walks. Either on Friday mornings or during the weekend. So I go from there. And that's usually how I catch up with that stuff. So that is what it is. If Mercedes Moné is really
the CEO of anything based on her run so far, what company would be the equivalent for her? Family Dollar, Struggling Red Lobster. Oh my God. Damn, I'm gonna get some flack for this. Mercedes Monet is the Zales of professional wrestling. Has a certain demographic, good to look at a mall, but that's pretty much it. You know, I don't. It was. She's definitely the Zales of mall. She's the Zales of professional wrestling. That's what I was trying to say. Sorry, I had a brain fart there. I'm sorry. You're no Cowboys fan, but is there a sense of intrigue of tuning in for Brady's broadcasting his first game during the Cowboys and Browns? I am. I think he's going to do a good job. Am I going to clamor and mark out for him like CBS was when Tony Romo became the commentator? Probably not, but, you know, that's just my thoughts on that really quick. Really quick. Let me do something really quick. Just 1 second, guys. All right, sorry about that. I had something to fix right there for you guys. Yeah, so you have that. I'm just not looking forward to seeing Tony Romo. But I'm not interested in following Tom Brady's journey as much as people are making out the big deal of Tony Romo when he was on the CBS broadcast. So that is what it is. With some big live events such as the roast of Tom Brady and Tyson versus Paul, is Netflix becoming must-see TV? Yes. Also, I found out today that How I Met Your Mother is coming back to Netflix, which is great to me because when I first started watching Netflix at my old apartment, How I Met Your Mother was on Netflix. And that's how I got to watch the whole series from there. I didn't watch the whole series as it was happening live because I was busy during those years. But How I Met Your Mother is my favorite TV show of all time. So I'm glad that it's coming back. And yeah, you got Raw coming up on Netflix at the beginning of the year. Netflix is where it's at, man. That's just what it is. So let's go to the next one here. The Office is doing a spinoff on Peacock featuring a struggling Midwestern newspaper as a story. How much do you care knowing that? I guess, like I said, maybe it's just me. Like, I watched a couple episodes. I thought the Jimmy and Pan story was nice, but I wasn't an Office mark, to say the least. I know I'm going to get a lot of flack for that, but, you know, The Office was what it was for me. Like, I liked it for what it was here and there, but the rest was hit and miss for me. That's what it is for me. Let's continue on here. What is going on with all these King and Queen of the Ring injuries lately? Will they bring up NXT people to fill slots, or can this tourney make it to May 25th? That's a little bit of an exaggeration there. I think we'll be fine through the rest of this quarterfinal matches, and it's already the semifinals. So that's a little bit of an exaggeration on your part there, brother. I know there has been an injury bug, but I don't think it's going to be something that's going to preclude the company to go through the tournaments. So that's my opinion on it. Is Jey Uso starting to build momentum toward a Cody Rhodes-like run as a crowd favorite as he feuds towards the title? Yeet. What is your favorite non-US premium live event so far in the past year, including and since last year's Backlash event? I really enjoyed Money in the Bank last year in London. I thought that was a fantastic show. Of course, Clash of the Castle, the first one in Cardiff was a phenomenal event. But the London show was really good. And yeah, the crowd jewel was pretty decent too last year from Saudi Arabia.
Those are the ones I would pick for me. On a personal note, how did your new podcast take shape or come together with your broadcast partner? Well, this unfortunately it's time for you to ask me that because I am not doing the Resilient podcast anymore with Rob Aurelius. I reached out to Rob this week and told him that it's just not in the best interest of me to continue on with the show. I'm in a very big transitional period in my life, and I had to focus on me now. And it's really not towards him. We have two different visions of what the podcast is and my participation level within it. With what's going on in my life, I cannot dedicate myself as I would to the other things that I'm dedicating myself to. And it's not good for my mental health to overextend myself in projects that I'm not passionate about and I'm not fully all in with. So I want him to continue to do it. I don't know if he's going to continue doing it or not, but I was glad for the two episodes that I was able to do, and I was grateful for the fact that he let me share my story and my background on there, and let me be myself on the show and not judge me off of perceptions and stuff like that. He let me speak for myself. So that's that. Last question here. Finally, Raynor has said that the biggest difference with Triple H in charge has been planning months and months in advance for creative. What is the biggest difference that you have noticed between H and Vince McMahon era? That's probably that. And you always hear the saying, though, the best bookers are always the ones that book backwards, I guess, to a certain extent. So that's what it is there. But you can tell a lot of difference. The production changes, the emphasis of what's being talked about within the verbiage of the promos and stuff like that, longer matches on TV, acknowledging other promotions, the same stuff that everybody else talks about on social media. So you can tell a lot of differences on the show for sure. But there are elements within today's WWE, in this new era of WWE, that has resemblance of the good stuff that Vince McMahon brought to the table, but people choose not to acknowledge it. And I understand why. So, well, that's it for now. Always good to check out the pod and keep crushing life, brother. Thank you, brother. I appreciate that. I want to thank Mike and Chris for the awesome questions this week. As always, if you ever want to participate in the Back Porch Q&A session, all you have to do is hit me up at Twitter at The Hoots Podcast or thehootspodcast@gmail.com. All right. Like I said, I made the promise here that I was going to read the second part. We always do. We read two parts of this book here. Never Finished by David Goggins, Unshackle Your Mind and Win the War Within. I read the first chapter at the beginning of the show, and now we're going to get into Evolution number 2. So, here we go. Never was a fucking thing. It was a lesson I first learned in Brazil, Indiana, when a classmate brought me a gift after school. I didn't get a lot of presents growing up, so when he handed me that one, I was a thirsty little motherfucker. I wanted to tear that bitch open and see what I got. The first loud rip got my grandfather's attention. He poked his head into the room and surveyed the scene. "Calm down," he said. Then he handed me a pair of scissors. "That's good wrapping paper. We can reuse that." A lot of us grew up with grandparents seized by the Great Depression, who knew we were working with finite resources. Even those who made a nice living didn't take comfort or playing for granted, and I guess that rubbed off on me. To this day, I abhor waste. I eat all my leftovers, and when my tube of toothpaste flattens out, I don't just roll it up to squeeze out the remainder. I cut that bitch open and put it in a Ziploc baggie until I use every last drop. Everything must be utilized, especially the energy in volatile, potentially damaging emotions like fear and hate. You have to learn how to handle them, how to mind them. And once you master that craft, any negative emotion or event that bubbles up in your brain or gets lobbied away like a grenade can be used as fuel to make you better. But to get there, you must literally listen to yourself.
In 2009, I was trained to ride in a 3,000-mile cycling race called the Race Across America, better known as RAM. I was still full-time in the military, so I had to wake up extra early to fit in my 50 to 100-mile rides before work. My weekend training rides stretched out over 200 miles. Sometimes I rode up upwards of 500 miles, often on the narrow shoulders of busy highways. I did all that because the RAM's distance scared me. The monotony of being able to stay locked up. Sorry about that. Just lost the page counts here. the monotony of being able to stay locked in on the bicycle for days at a time without sleep freaked me the fuck out. The race burrowed me so deep into my psyche that I wasn't sleeping well. To demystify the experience, I made a point of chronicling each ride on a handheld tape recorder. I described everything I saw and felt in granular detail. It was mostly just me on a bike with cars, Harleys, and semi-zooming past. I smelled all the exhaust, felt the wind slap me upside the head, and tasted the grit of an open road. When I veered onto the blue roads, I wouldn't see a single car for 50 miles, but that white line was ever present. Whether the shoulder was wide, thin, or non-existent, the white line was always there. I listened to those tapes at night and visualized the white line at 1,000 times. I became entranced by the simplicity of it, which helped me minimize everything else about the race. Though I didn't answer him that year because of emergency heart surgery, I knew I stumbled onto a system to minimize my fears and build confidence that I would use for years to come. I can't possibly fathom the hours spent alone riding the white line. When I started speaking to Fortune 500 companies and professional ball clubs for a living, I had to be willing to rebel my fucked up life story to successful people, including millionaires and billionaires who had heard it all. This wasn't some simple recruiting trip to a high school where students were easily impressed and all my anxiety around public speaking resurfaced. Once again, I broke out the tape recorder. I spoke my fears and my trauma, which not that many people knew about. It's in that microphone and discovered a strange, unexpected alchemy. My fear and trauma were transformed into energy and confidence. Many people write out their darkest moments in a journal or a diary and hope to gain some leverage on whatever it is they survive or are struggling to overcome. I've kept the journal for years, but there are levels to this shit, and a written archive is the entry level. Our audio recordings are more interactive and accessible and have a more profound effect on the mind. If you are bullied, abused, or sexually assaulted and are willing to speak the unfiltered truth into the microphone and listen to it over and over after a period of time, it will become just another story. A powerful story for sure, but the poison will be neutralized, and the power will be yours. This is not a task to take lightly. If you survive the acute trauma, you don't want to think about what you were doing on the day it happened, what you heard and how you felt, or how your life capsized afterwards. Do it anyway. The more color and context you can add to the track, the sooner you will walk the streets with your headphones on and your head held high. When people see you coming, they might think you're listening to an Eminem jam, but no. It's your deepest trauma, the scene of your supposed destruction on repeat, which each subsequent listen, you'll gain more and more power and gain enough transformational energy to change your life. Most people don't even want to think about their darkest shit, much less talk about it. They refuse to speculate in the harsh wilderness of their past because they're afraid of exposure. Believe me, there's gold in them. There's gold in them, their hills. I know because I was the black dude in the cowboy hat, hip deep in the icy stream, panning for nuggets. And if you find the courage to paint the picture of your worst nightmare in a spoken word, then listen to it until it soaks in and saturates your mind until you can hear it without any emotional reaction or spillover. It will no longer make you cower or cry. It'll make you strong enough to walk on a stage and tell the whole world what they did to you and how it didn't break you. It made you powerful. Recording yourself isn't just a reliable tool for neutralizing trauma. It can change the dynamic of almost any situation or mood. If you use it properly,
It could also keep you honest. One day, a couple years ago, not long after wrapped up my training for 10 miles of running per day or 20 or more, I felt drained and sore, too tired to run, and kept telling myself that I needed a day off. As I relaxed on the couch, I tuned into my self-talk. Then I grabbed my recorder and lied into the microphone. I wanted to hear how it sounded out loud. I was real with myself. I cataloged my recent runs and nagging injuries and described how much I thought a day off might help me. I made a solid case for a much-needed rest day, but when I paid it back, the jury of one was unconvinced, because my inner bitch was suddenly the emperor with no clothes. Buck naked in the light of day, he was impossible to ignore and even harder to stomach. I was off the couch and out the road in a matter of seconds. Many people wake up with a dread or doubt day after day. They dread their workouts, their class load, or their job. Maybe they have a test or a presentation that makes them nervous, or they know that the day's workout will hurt. While they linger in bed, they tune into their soft, forgiving self-talk, which doesn't make it any easier to get up and moving. Most people rise up eventually, but they remain in the days for hours because they aren't fully engaged with their lives. Their self-talk has made them numb to the moment, and they sleepwalk through half the day before they finally perk the fuck up. The way we speak to ourselves in the moments of doubt is crucial. Whether or not the stakes are high, because our words become actions and our actions build habits that can coat our minds and bodies with a plague of ambivalence, hesitancy, and passivity and separate us from our own lives. If any of this sounds familiar, grab your phone and record your inner dialogue as soon as you wake up. Don't hold back. Spill all your dread, laziness, and stress into the mic. Now listen to it. 9 times out of 10, you won't like what you hear. It'll make you cringe. You wouldn't want your girlfriend or boyfriend or your boss or your kids to hear your unfiltered weakness. But you should, because then you could repurpose it. You could reuse it to remind yourself that changes must be made. Listening might inspire you to commit your life in a deeper way, to be your best at work, at school, or in the gym. It could challenge you to rewrite the narrative so that when you bed down, you won't feel like you wasted another valuable day. Do it again the next morning, but this time, once you get through listening to all your whining about the shit you don't want to do, sit up in bed and lay down a second. Pretend you're motivating a friend or loved one who's going through challenges. Be respectful of the issues they face, but be positive, forceful, and realistic. This is a skill that demands repetition, and if you do it regularly, you'll find that it won't take long for your self-talk to flip from doubt and dread to optimism and empowerment. The conditions of your life might not change a whole lot at first, but your words will make sure that your approach does change, and that will eventually enable you to shift everything. But you must speak the truth and be willing to listen to it. Don't be afraid of your weakness or doubt. Don't be embarrassed and pretend it doesn't exist. It surfaced for a reason, so use it to flip the dynamic of your life. Lately, I've used this technique with the hate that comes at me online. Most people in my position don't read negative comments or emails. They ask someone else screen and then erase them. I see hate as just another fuel source. I see the beauty and the power in it. I never let it go to waste. When the negative comments come in, and they always do, I capture them in a screenshot and speak them into my microphone. In 2001, I posted an image of my swollen left knee, which inspired a flood of negative comments. Some claimed to have seen my breakdown coming in and counted it as a personal win. Others simply liked seeing me in pain. I'm tired of hearing you run your fucking mouth, one of them wrote. I hope I never see your black ass run again, wrote another. They were trying to salt my wounds. They wanted me to feel the sting, which I did, and hope it would bring me down even further. It didn't. I love those comments. I love them so much, I made a mixtape. I printed them all out, recorded myself saying each one, and then I looped that bitch. Whenever I have a bad day, I listen to it. Sometimes I walk around the house savoring it in full stereo. Most people only mind the positive shit. They want everything and everyone to be nice and hunky-dory. They get filled up on sweetness and recoil from the dark, bitter pill of hate. But there's not nearly as much fuel in ass-kissing, attaboys, and accolades as there is in hate. Luckily, the world is filled with jealous, insecure haters. If you don't get negative comments on social media, find your fuel in the thoughtless of comment of friend or doubt of a teacher or coach. I'm sure it stings when you feel slighted, underestimated, criticized, or excluded. But just know that the heat you feel is the energy waiting to be burned.
Don't crawl up in a corner, worry about the people who disrespect you. Repackage what you're hearing and feel it until it works for you. That is a winner's mentality. Winners in life see everything they experience and everything they hear, see, and feel as pure energy. They train their minds to find it. They drop into the gnarly crevices to mine golden nuggets of trauma, doubt, and hate. They do not live disposable, single-use lives. They discard nothing and refurbish everything. They find strength in bullying and heartbreak in the defeats and failures. They harvest it from the people who hate them personally and from the online trolls, too. Some people go to sleep with a meditation app. Others open windows to the night sound or stream white noise, whale songs, or the lullaby of a sea lapping some lonely shore. When I bed down at night, I listen to my haters, and it's obvious those punk-ass bitches don't have the slightest idea of who they are dealing with. I'm the person who turns their every negative word into my positive progress. I take what they serve me, roll it up in that wrapping paper I saved way back then, and shove it right up their fucking asses in the form of another workout, another long run, and another year of leveling the fuck up. Honestly, I should thank them. They make me stronger and more determined to achieve my goals, which only makes them hate me even more. It's time to make your own mixtape, hashtag tape record yourself, hashtag never finish. There you go. Some real powerful shit in this book. Never finish, unshackle your mind and win the war within by David Goggins. We'll get to chapter 3 and evolution 3 next week. But I know we're going to put a ribbon on the bow in this week's episode. I hope you guys enjoyed it. Love to see some feedback. Hit me up at Twitter at The Hoots Podcast. You can follow me there at The Hoots Podcast, by the way, on X, at Josh Lopez Music on Instagram. Also, hit me up throughout the week. Let me know what's your thoughts on the wrestling world, thoughts on the podcast as a whole, anything. In general, I'd love to hear from you guys. Always remember, folks, be the authentic product that is yourself. And remember, nobody dictates and paints your life but yourself and the man upstairs. I love y'all. Enjoy the week. Next week, we'll do our previews and predictions for the King and Queen of the Ring, PLE in Saudi Arabia, and we'll see what happens next in this crazy world of professional wrestling. For everybody, I'm Josh, and this has been episode 413 of the Hoots Podcast, and we'll talk to y'all next week. Yeet.
Bye-bye, bitch.